Welcome back to the Bitter End Podcast, where Christmas is over now and so everyone's fucking miserable.
I'm not miserable. I'm feeling pumped. You know why, Tom? Because I'm super excited to talk to our listeners about the wrap-up episode of season fucking 8 of the Bitter End Podcast, where we are going to talk all about Home Alone as a whole, baby. We're taking a step back.
Well, your infectious energy has pulled me back into the room. I'm here, everybody. I'm ready to talk about this with you. Season 8, done. Jesus Christ.
It was only 5 movies, but it was a little bit of a slog.
There was a lot going on in there, and not all of it needed to be there.
I think it's quite telling that our imaginations ran slightly wild with these movies compared to some of the others, because there just wasn't really enough in the films to capture it, right?
Yeah, okay, so let's talk about, like, we've, over the series, we've let our imaginations run wild and we've had a lot of theories, but let's just talk about these films as what is on the screen sans the mythos and the pain and suffering. Yeah, I mean, like, the first two films are both clocking near the 2-hour mark, don't they?
And it's brutal.
And they are bloated films. Like, John Hughes was not good at editing. I think I was seeing some stuff about him. Like, he was a very notoriously fast writer. So he would, like, turn out a script over like a weekend or a week. You know, like, he would do the revisions super, super quick. And that made sense to me when I was kind of like, right, okay, so this is why, like, what, like, the fucking toothbrush bit and doing the laundry and the boiler room and, like, just, like, all the mishmash that the first two films are made up of, like, with, you know, like, the goofy slapstick within, like, the kind of the heart and soul pathos of your bird lady and your shovel man. And, like, it's like, they're a bit, I know people love these films, and more power to you. But come on, guys, they are a bit of a mess.
I mean, that running time alone is a bit of a gut punch when you first realise what you're in for, especially when you're watching it outside of Christmas time. The only thing I can think is that maybe the delete key on John Hughes's laptop was broken. And so everything that went down had to go down.
And yeah. I imagine because, like, you couldn't... I guess, like, his computer was hooked up to a printer that was just printing as he went. And so it's like, well, I've got to use all this, otherwise we're losing money on this picture if I have to then go back and, like, redo things.
It's like, mate, do you know how much a ream of paper costs?
Whoa!
He can't
read it. Back in 1990 money? Oh, my God. And also, yeah, that's a long... Felt like a... I mean, like, films nowadays clock in, you know, like, a lot of people are like, oh, films are too long now. They're like, you know, 2 hours, 2.5 hours... This was a family film made in 1990.
I mean, from what, I don't have kids, but what I understand is it's quite difficult to get them to sit down and, like, pay attention to stuff. So the idea of having, like, a small child go to the cinema and sit through 2 hours of Culkin antics, and don't get me wrong, this isn't a criticism of the movie as a kid's movie. Good kid's movie, a lot of fond memories of it, great for Christmas time. I'm just talking as, like, a piece of filmmaking and, like, a day out and, like, getting the family to all sit there and the kids to not just, like, start, you know, talking and throwing shit and saying they're bored and stuff. Like, how is that ever going to fly?
Well, I don't know, because we must have done this when we were kids. We were, like, of the age that we went and saw this when we were around, what, like, I must have been 8 years old when this first, you know, so I was, like, prime age for this. And I, you know, like, I liked it. I remember seeing Home Alone 2 at the cinema and being like, yeah, cool, I'm all about this. I mean, Home Alone 2, I think, is a much more exciting film than the first one.
Just because of the
razzmatazz of
big city living.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll be honest, that was probably my... That probably is the best one, right? Home Alone 2, even though it is also the one that most deservedly could be cut in half.
Yeah, and it just completely retreads everything else that went before it in the first one.
Do you have a favourite? Is it Home Alone 2?
I think Home Alone 2. I mean, there's fun moments in one, but I was actually kind of surprised at how mundane a lot of that film is. Like, I'm just never going to get over this toothbrush bit, man. Like,
I can tell. I can see your new tattoo of just a toothbrush with a line through it.
Never forget.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that. But, like, okay. So, I mean, those are our two Culkin guys, right?
Right.
But we should talk about where it goes after Culkin, because even doing a sequel, one sequel, seemed like too much. Like, you know, the amount of coincidence and happenstance that has to happen in the first film for the audience to believably go like, yeah, okay, I guess he's on his own now. For that all to happen in the second one is kind of like, okay, this is a bit of a push. But then where they take it with all the other ones, like, it doesn't seem like a premise to a film that naturally would go like, yeah, cool, we'll do more of those. Unless, like, well, I guess it makes sense that they did it with different kids.
I think it's good that they did it with different kids, and they did also kind of give up somewhat on the premise of him being home alone.
Oh yeah, because there's multiple ones where he's just not.
Yeah, and it's clear that what these films are really more about is a kid foiling some mean grown-ups. That's what it is. It's yeah. They become, very seriously, I think, they're like children's revenge pictures. You know, they're about kids getting their own back on the parents that, not parents, but the grown-ups that deserve to be taken down a peg or stopped in some way.
Yeah.
And much less of this sort of wish fulfillment, this is what kids would do if there were no parents around.
Yeah, but I think that there is a kind of element of wish fulfillment in that, in like the last three films, but it's a lot more condensed. I think those last three films, they're less, what I would say, family pictures and more kids pictures, you know?
Yeah, like,
There's more in there, I think, for an adult in the first two, and then it becomes a bit more skewed towards kids, even though obviously like the main lead in all of them is a child.
And I get that, and I think it's really important to not write off those last three films purely on the basis that they are for kids. And,
No.
A lot of people really look down on them. And don't get me wrong, they're certainly not the best kids' films in the world, but like, you can't hold them up to the same standard as even the first two Home Alone films, because they're doing something very different.
Yeah, and there's some fucking crazy shit in those films. Like, in Home Alone 3, when the guy gets, like, a running lawnmower dropped on his face, that is some fucked up shit.
That is Wile E. Coyote shit.
I know,
man.
It's crazy. And, I mean, we just got to talk a little bit about Home Alone 4. Right, so it's a Christmas film, and you're going to say South Africa, yeah, okay, we'll film it there, and just how they just get around the fact that, like, yeah, we are in the middle of a desert, we'll just say it's unseasonably warm, and how they film all the exterior shots, that everything is just, they've made everything, they've just colour graded everything to be a little bit more grey and autumnal, and that's the way of, like, we'll do this, no one will know that we're in sunny South Africa, because we'll just put a bit of a filter over everything, and it's so bad.
But why do you think they bothered setting it at Christmas at all?
I don't know, because these films don't need to be set at Christmas. They 100% do not need to be set at Christmas.
I agree with you. First one, little bit more than the others. The fact that they're all, the whole McAllister clan is moving out of the country at the same time that all of their neighbours will also be away. Like, that's kind of a bit, like, there's only probably a couple of days in the calendar where that would be a thing, right?
Yeah.
The others, fucking no way, doesn't need to be a thing.
Yeah, so I don't know why. I guess it just became part of, like, Home Alone became part of the public consciousness, and everyone thinks it's a Christmas film, so you have to set them at Christmas. You can't then be like, you know, like, Home Alone, Miami Beach. It's, even though, yes, please.
Yes, please.
But yeah, I don't know. Because it's weird, like, in like the third one, they kind of say it's Christmas, but it's kind of not.
I think they make a point of saying that Christmas has just happened. It's like, just, it's between Christmas and New Year.
Yeah, and that's an awful time to set a film.
Yeah. And everyone's just all lethargic and on their, like, 20th pigs in blanket sandwich.
Yeah. It's a bit of an odd one, that. A bit of an oddity. But I think it picked up on the last movie.
The TV movie, Home Alone 5, The Holiday Heist. That was...
It was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Had some actually decent writing in it. Like some nice gags.
Solid gags. And obviously, you know, the end result of them defeating the Yellow King and freeing McDowell from his hell prison.
I mean, what do you think... Because Home Alone 4 was meant to be almost like a pilot for a TV series. How was that going to work?
Was it just, like, not to harp on about this Christmas thing, but was the TV show always going to be set at Christmas?
I don't know. I mean, where was it all going to be set? Was it going to be set in that robot future house?
I guess maybe the premise of the show would be it's about a little boy who lives in a futuristic house.
Yeah, and then he just gets up to scrapes when he's on his own. Maybe?
Yeah, he gets... I don't know if French Stewart would have been like a recurring character.
I just don't see how you could stretch that out to be like, what, like a 22 episodes, you know, a season TV series.
They probably would have been like 11 minute episodes, like, honestly, like...
Yeah, but even then, it's just like, it's just weird, man. I don't know. I don't know what they were smoking.
Well, speaking of weird... these films, at least the first two, have got a lot of conspiracy theories about them. And just the ones that we've really latched onto, but like a few sort of people really, really like thinking about the meaning behind these films.
Do you think it's because there's just such a long runtime and like a real vacuum going on in the middle of at least Home Alone 1 that people have nothing else to do but just to kind of like really mull over,
just,
you know,
mull. You've got a whole year until you're gonna watch it next time.
So
like the first one that kind of leapt out at me that was doing the rounds, these sort of articles seem to be going around in the Christmas season, was the theory that Kevin McAllister grows up to be Jigsaw from the Saw films.
Yes,
obviously it appealed to me as a horror fan. The problem with this is that this is like the most bare level. It's like slightly below a joke that you would make to your mate in the pub once and they go, huh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then that's it. Because it doesn't even hold up to even the remotest bit of scrutiny.
Yeah.
He makes some traps, but straight off the bat, they have different names and are from different cities. So don't think so, mate.
Yeah, and also there's no other connective tissue there.
That's
where,
it.
Where you could, you know, where you could almost be like... You know, stuff like where there's like, you know, like one bit of like made just for the movie, like Tarantino has like those the red apple cigarettes or something like that. You
know,
like something that just exists in the movie universe of Home Alone that also exists in the Saw universe.
Yeah.
There's nothing actually concrete other than go like, hey, what about this? And go, yeah. Why not? No one's here to say it's not.
Yeah, exactly. You may as well say that, like, oh, he grew up to be Arnold Schwarzenegger in Predator because he's got a flamethrower at one point because he sets the dude's head on fire.
Yeah, exactly.
There's like no other thing. So that one is going straight in the bin. Tom, you got any fan theories to...
So there's one about the cut on Shovel Man's hand.
Oh, okay.
So like when we get to see Shovel Man in the hardware... the toothbrush selling scene, he slams his hand down on the counter and he's got a very big bandaged hand, like big bloody gash obviously on it that they're to freak out Kevin, but it's also and maybe to make you think like, oh, he's been out doing that murdering and stuff like that, but it's such a strong it's so center screen, it's just a strong image.
Yeah
And you're like, okay, what's all this about? Nothing really, it's never really mentioned again. But when you see Shovel Man and Kevin in the church and they have their conversation, Shovel Man now, like, the wound seems to be better, he's got like a plaster on his hand, just like a band-aid. And then at the end when you see him like reunite with his son, he waves and he doesn't have anything on his hand. And so there's like the theory that the wound is actual physical manifestation of the rift between Shovel Man and his son, and that through meeting Kevin, the wound starts to heal. Like, he's on the mend when he meets him in the church, and Kevin's like, hey, maybe you should not be a dick and go make up with your son. And then by the end of it, it healed.
Now, is that a conspiracy theory, or is that just symbolism and the language of cinema?
Well, it depends on whether or not it was intended or not.
And I'm going to say that it probably was. As the arbiter of all of these things, I've decided that this fan theory does not go in the bin. This one goes on the shelf.
Okay, that one has been confirmed. 100% that is what happened.
Is there not another theory around Shovel Man that he is Kevin from the future?
Yes, he is. And like... where it's like he's had this rift with his son and he's gone back in time to try and, I don't know, to kind of like patch things up by interacting with his past self. But then that's also just means that, like, wait, did he But his son is in the past as well. So what did he do? Did he, like, travel back in time with his whole family, and then he had a falling out with his son, and then he's like, well, conveniently, my younger self is here, I'll go and, like, talk to him? Like, it doesn't really work because of the time travel and the son being there.
I would also like to hold this up to some of the same scrutiny as the Jigsaw one. Why does he have a different name in the future?
Yeah. Why doesn't he go like, Kevin, it's me from the future?
Yeah. Don't have an argument with your son. You'll regret it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's going in the bin? So you got any more hot theories?
Yeah, I do. There's quite an interesting theory about the Talkboy voice recorder from Home Alone 2, which was not an actual toy that was available at the time that the film was written or released, but subsequently became available as a toy after the kids saw it in the film.
Yep.
There's some chatter that this was... that John Hughes was paid by the government to include this in the film as a way of making... surveillance and listening technology less frightening to the American public by sort of teasing it in a kids' film and making it something that children would then want to have in their homes, for parents to then go out and buy. People would be less shocked by the slow encroachment of sort of surveillance recordings, things like this, being in their homes in general.
Right.
That one is probably bollocks, but I do like that one. It's of all of the conspiracies that we've brought up so far, that's the... I mean, maybe it's the state of the world in 2018, but that's the one I believe the most.
Yeah, it's a bit of an odd one, but like, yeah.
Why put it in the film if it's not a real toy?
I don't know. John Hughes has got some crazy, crazy ideas. I heard that one. That one's kind of a quite... That one's like maybe the darkest one.
Yeah. What do you think? Bin or shelf?
Let's put it on the shelf.
Okay. Looks lovely up there.
It looks great. And I think we've got... I've got another one for you.
All right.
Uncle Frank was behind the whole thing.
Well, Uncle Frank is a huge prick.
Yeah, I like that this one is basically a way of explaining why Uncle Frank is such an unreasonable douchebag. Is that, like, I think he's behind getting Harry and Marv to knock over his brother's house.
Talk to me, is there any reasoning behind that other than just people don't like Uncle Frank?
I think it's just that people don't like Uncle Frank, and I think that that maybe there's some, like, people who have this theory that think that Frank was behind Kevin being left behind, which is why he seems so like he doesn't give a shit.
But he's not behind Uncle Frank. But he's not behind Kevin being left behind. Kevin is, because he got into the fight about the pizza and lost his ticket.
Yeah. I think that people trying to look around in, like, Home Alone for theories, it's a fool's errand. And I don't see why anyone would do it unless, of course, you're two incredibly handsome boys from Brighton who stumbled across a real gold mine of evil and villainy.
So, Tom, this Uncle Frank was behind it all along. Where is that particular theory going?
Yeah, let's put it in the bin.
In the bin. All right, well, I think that's maybe it for the theories for now.
Some good theorying there.
Tom, did you know that there is a Home Alone board game?
No, but I love that.
Yeah, it's like a super, like, it came out probably around the time. I've watched a video online of some people playing it. I've looked it up on eBay.
How much does it go for?
At the moment, about 25 quid on eBay.
That's actually not too bad.
For our US listeners, that's roughly 34 US dollars.
This Home Alone, like, for things to adapt, like... Home Alone into a board game seems like, yeah, that could work.
Yeah, and it's not quite what you'd think, because when I first heard Home Alone board game, straight away I thought Mousetrap.
Yeah.
Right? Like booby traps, like plastic bits, rolling marbles around, stuff like that. But it's not. It's quite a weird game, especially because you play as Harry and Marv.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So the game, the board looks like the house. And it's worth saying that the artwork on the game box and everything is really nice.
Okay.
Like, it's really nicely hand illustrated. They've gone out of their way to make everything look real. Like, like it is in the film. There's like cartoonish representations. There's all these nice little nods and touches. And basically, you've got a bunch of little, like, pieces of cardboard that are either... treasure that you have to hide, or booby traps that you have to make your opponent think are treasure. And then you there's red ones and green ones. That's you and me as we're playing.
Yeah.
Hide them all around the house, turn them all face down. And then we both control Harry and Marv at the same time. And you're like, oh, I'm going to go see what this thing is because I reckon Tom's hidden his treasure there. And you go, no, it was a booby trap. And then I lose some points. But if it's treasure, then I get it. And then you just kind of go around like that, controlling them, rolling the dice, moving them around, stumbling across traps and losing points, or finding the treasure and gaining points. It's pretty simple. It's basically a memory game because you can pick up your own treasure.
So, okay, right.
But you have like 25 things, so you have to remember. It gets harder.
Yeah, yeah.
The one thing that's a real catch is that in amongst all of this, one piece of treasure is Kevin McAllister.
Right, okay.
And you hide him, and if somebody stumbles across Kevin McAllister, then there's a new piece on the board, which is him,
yeah.
And you have to roll an extra dice for him to run around and hide. And if Harry or Marv ever catch up with him, then that's the end of the game.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, game over. But yeah, it looks fun enough, right?
Yeah, I think that sounds pretty cool. So, like, I mean, almost in a way, you're playing Harry and Marv and Kevin, because you're setting up all the traps. You're kind of like playing all the roles.
You're playing some sort of omnipotent overseer, I suppose.
Some sort of king.
Some sort of king of some particular colour or shade, yes.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, that works out. Now, there's also, I do believe, a whole butt ton of them Home Alone video games.
Oh, yes. And you know that we cannot talk about video games without bringing in our pal, who some listeners may remember from the Nightmare on Elm Street series that we did. It's Milo, the video game king of Brighton.
Hi, I'm fucking Milo.
Milo, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for being here to tell us all about that sweet, sweet Home Alone gamage.
Because am I right in thinking, Milo, there is an absolute butt ton of Home Alone video games?
Man, I think we've been playing a few of them, haven't we? I think we played about 5 different versions.
Sweet Jiminy Christmas. What?
Yes, yeah. Listeners, you did not mishear that. There are at least as many Home Alone video games as there are Home Alone films. But they're not. There is not one game for each film. I went over to Milo's palatial video game mansion earlier today, and we had a go on. What were they all?
Okay, so first of all, we started off on the Mega Drive version of Home Alone 1. Okay.
How does that play out?
Okay, so you initially start outside Kevin McAllister's house. It's got a top-down view.
It's like Grand Theft Auto or something. Oh, old school.
Whoa, and, okay, and you're on like a sort of motorized sled. And,
yeah. Okay,
and the initial idea is to like sledge around on this motorized sledge, ramming like snowmen and collecting as many items as possible.
So just like the film?
Exactly like
the
film.
Yeah,
because everyone
remembers
the motorized sled.
Yeah, and all that sort of like murdering of snowmen, yes. Yeah. Okay, good. I'm glad that's all present and correct.
Okay.
Any good?
It's great fun.
Is it?
I spent like at least 10 minutes just like sledding around, hitting those snowmen, collecting random items like tires.
It does sound like Grand Theft Auto.
Well, there is quite a bit more to this game than initially sounds, because what it really reminded me of, dear listeners, when I had a go, is the old Friday the 13th video game. Now,
ooh,
not the recent PlayStation 4 and Xbox version. I'm talking about the old school one where you have to run around the Camp Crystal Lake and there's all of the cabins, and then suddenly the Jason alarm will go off and you have to find the cabin and stop Jason murdering children.
Okay.
Because, Milo, there are multiple houses, is this correct?
There were 5 houses, all uniquely themed, and the idea is you're supposed to go to each house, well, sled around, collect as many items as possible. All the time, well, during this time, you've got the wet bandits driving around in their van, and they're going to each house randomly, robbing them up. And
ah,
so
boys,
you need to go to each uniquely themed house and set as many traps as possible to halt their progress.
Okay.
And the idea of the game is there's like a timer that's ticking down, and on there's 2 modes. So there's an easy mode and an expert mode.
I like there is no middle ground there. There's no intermediate.
So basically easy mode, it's 20 minutes. You've got to like stop them from robbing 5 houses in 20 minutes by using various traps and weapons. Very similar to the film in that respect. And expert mode is basically double the time.
Okay, cool. So he's homes alone. He's not been left in one house on his own. He's been left in 5.
Five.
And you say that unique, right?
Yes.
So one of them is the Munster's house, right?
Well, funnily enough, there is like a sort of old, oldie-woldie house, and the unique theme of that house is all the... There's a ghost that...
Fucking A.
That haunts the house.
Yeah, of course there is. Like in the film.
Yeah, just like in the film. And the ghost, like, electrocutes you if you get near it, but if you're also the wet bandits, it electrocutes them, which allows you to lay more traps, hold them up, and ultimately wait until the cops turn up.
Well, this all checks out for me.
Sounds great.
Milo, how many thumbs up would you give this particular... What was it? Home Alone on the Mega Drive?
Home Alone 1 on the Mega Drive. 4 thumbs up.
4 thumbs up.
That's a lot of thumbs.
Which brings us to the next game that we played, which was a Home Alone 2 game.
Home Alone 2 on the original NES.
Okay, now what's the deal with that?
Right, I actually bought this as a cartridge off eBay for £2.77.
Was this money well spent?
Not really.
Ah.
This one, I have to say, is absolutely fucked up. It's so weird. And the very first thing you see is like a digital graphic of a guy that is half Tim Curry and half Rob Schneider. He looks like he's got Tim Curry's face, but Rob Schneider's hair.
Ooh.
I know. And he's just trying to get you because you're in the hotel and you're insufferable Kevin McAllister.
So it's relentless. You literally start off and this like fucked up 8-bit version of Tim Curry is just straight up your ass.
Wow. Oh, okay. Wow. It sounds terrifying.
It's like one of those side-scrolly guys. But there's a few sort of interesting things here. The first thing that I noticed is one of the baddies. The first baddie you see is a disembodied suitcase that bounces around all on its own.
Yep.
Next baddie is a disembodied mop that kind of does a Sorcerer's Apprentice kind of
Disney
thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the next thing I noticed as well that's quite interesting, Kevin has a gun.
Multiple guns.
Multiple guns.
There's loads of different weapons.
There's a lot of the other baddies are actual humans that you have to shoot.
Is Donald Trump in it?
I didn't clock in straight away.
He must be the end of level boss, surely.
Well, funny enough, there is quite an interesting end of level boss.
Okay, hit me.
So you end up having to fight this chef, big fat chef, who I can only describe as a combination of Tom Kerridge and a Chippendale.
Because, so like, because every time you hit him,
right,
he takes off an item of clothing.
Oh, okay.
You hit him once and he takes off his jacket and rolls up his sleeves. Like, he's like, all right, this is serious. But then you hit him again and he unbuttons his shirt. And then you hit him again, his shirt comes off entirely. He's fully bare-chested. You hit him again, his trousers fall down and you can see that he's got, like, little heart boxer shorts on. And then you hit him one more time and he collapses inside his chef's hat. And it's just the chef's hat bouncing up and down. And then I watched as Milo attempted to kill the chef's hat, but was eaten by it.
That's wild. That's some fucked up shit.
Now, bearing in mind that the sort of enemies in the game, some of them you can shoot them. Some of them you can do the sort of classic Kevin McAllister slide. Mm. Some of them you can jump on their head. It's just so random. And I tried two different things, didn't I? And it just, I was on my last bit of life. And that was it.
This slide is worth mentioning because these games, as a recurring theme, is that these games definitely seem to think that the slide that Kevin does in the first film, when he goes on his knees and goes over there, they seem to think that that is an iconic Kevin McAllister thing. As iconic as him having a gun, apparently.
Yeah. Do you think that people played, like people who were making the game actually had seen the film? Because there must have been, like, with these like licensed games coming out for movies, that people just probably, here are a few photos, here's kind of what goes on in the film. Well, this is a bit we're not sure if it's going to make the final cut or not, where like Kevin like shoots this guy in the butt and then goes to like this like sex dungeon in the kitchen. We'll work around that, don't worry about it. What?
Yeah.
It sounds wild.
As I said, I didn't really get much further than this first hotel level.
Were you just too creeped out by this
point? Massive fat stripping.
Yeah. I'm assuming chef. That this game, it sounds like a precursor to Resident Evil or something like that, where you're just, you know, when you're just playing it, you're like, oh God, I got to go through that door. And I know there's something scary through that door. Oh my God, what's going on?
Well, I was just scared being an 11-year-old boy having to like slide into a massive stripping chef's groin.
Yeah. Fair.
And Milo, how many thumbs up for Home Alone 2 on the NES?
I would give that 2 thumbs up.
Okay. So not as many.
Okay.
Which brings us to our third game, Milo, which is what?
The third game we played was Home Alone 1 on the NES, on the original Nintendo. And funnily enough, this game was made by a company called Bethesda. And I don't know if anyone's ever heard of that company.
Mm-mm.
I had not.
They made Fallout.
I have heard of Fallout.
And Skyrim.
I have played Skyrim.
How fucked up is that?
Was this comparable to those games?
Not at all. Although, Todd, you quite enjoyed it.
You'll have to refresh my memory because I have played an awful lot of Home Alone video games today. Which one was this?
Okay, so this is the one where you start off and you're getting chased straight away and you're in Kevin McAllister's house. And
oh, fuck yeah, this one was really fun.
The one you like the most, basically.
So you're getting chased straight away.
Yeah, you're getting chased straight away. It's the shittest graphics. It's like really cartoony, like neon nightmarish. You're in a 2D house. If you start the game and don't do anything within about 5 seconds, you will be dead instantly.
Okay, that seems fair.
And then like you're being chased by these two guys that look like neither Harry nor Marv, and you have to run around until you find something you can pick up and then immediately drop it in a place that they will walk into it, which like buys you maybe 10 seconds of time.
But it is absolutely relentless, the speed of it, and you have to just keep going. You cannot stop. At least with the other game, you can sort of find an area where you can sort of like stop and like have a bit of a break.
Is it kind of like a video game version of that horror film, It Follows?
Oh, it's exactly like It Follows. Now you are talking my language.
Really fast.
Yeah. Yeah, It Follows very quickly.
So I'm guessing there's no like bonus game in it where you have to go and try and buy a toothbrush or do laundry.
Well, we didn't make it very far. And I will say that the end state of this game is very unclear because you can't kill either of the wet bandits. You can just slow them down by a tiny amount. And we went all through that house. We did the little thing where you go on the pulley over the wire into the treehouse. Yeah, yeah, we went into the basement. We climbed up a drain pipe. We did everything. And they just don't stop coming.
Nothing like having a game that you can't possibly complete.
Milo, how many thumbs up for Home Alone 1 on the NES?
Well, personally, probably one.
One thumb up.
Least favourite game, I would say.
Okay, which brings us to game number four.
Game number four was Home Alone 2 on the Mega Drive / Genesis.
Oh, I remember this
one. You remember this one, yeah. So you start off in the airport. It's a standard sort of side-scrolling 2D platformer affair.
The graphics are much better, right?
I thought the graphics were probably better than the first Mega Drive game. Very nice and detailed characters, but the gameplay sucked.
Yeah, there was a lot of, like, Kevin's got these baseballs that he can throw at people.
Oh, like in the film, yeah.
Just like in the film. And then there's a lot of, like, angry commuters come along and you throw a baseball at them and then they die. But then they also drop their suitcase, which will kill you. And then the security guards start running for you and you can't kill them. And then you get trapped in an end section. And then, like in Terminator 2, the doors of the lift open and fucking Joe Pesci, little Joey Fishes, comes out. I don't remember him being in the airport.
No.
And you can't kill him either. And you're supposed to get in the lift, but I couldn't do it. I was not Kevin McAllister enough.
No, I mean, few are.
I did manage to get to the downstairs area.
And were you rewarded?
I was in like some sort of luggage sort of moving area and it was awful. I was just stuck between all these like conveyor belts, didn't know what the fuck I was doing. And that's as far as I got.
Milo, how many thumbs up for Home Alone 2 on the Mega Drive?
2 thumbs up.
Oh, okay, interesting.
I just need to give it a bit more time, I think.
Bit more time with that one. Which brings us to the final Home Alone video game of this particular session. And Milo, what was that?
So that was Home Alone 1 on the Super Nintendo.
Now, my knowledge is that this is a later system, right? So this came out years after the first
game. No, not at all. It would have come out exactly the same time
as the NES one.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Oh, okay.
There was an overlap period when they were released.
Anyway, so you start off again in Kevin McAllister's house. You start off in his bedroom. Again, another standard sort of 2D platform affair.
I noticed that the music was a lot better. This is the first of the games that actually had John Williams' music.
Oh,
the
really?
Bum, bum, ba, ba, bum, 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 in like a chiptune kind of version.
Tight.
Yeah, I guess with the Super NES, you had like a little bit more, you know, slightly more enhanced audio. You could actually sample, do proper samples.
Mm.
So it was actually, yeah, it was quite impressive to hear that.
The game, though?
Oh, the game. Oh, I forgot about the game. Okay, so you start off in his bedroom. You're sort of jumping around, collecting various treasure, I guess, or loot. And
yep,
you have
yep.
to...
Yep, all makes sense. It all checks out.
Then you have to throw it down the sort of garbage disposal thing into the basement to keep it safe, I'm guessing, from the wet bandits.
Well, you'd think the wet bandits, because... that you would be wrong, because the villains in this... are these strange, like, 1920s Chicago gangsters in, like, pinstripe suits, bowler hats.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're really weird looking. They're, like, proper, like, zoot suited up. And they just stand around, and they don't attack you at all. They don't hurt you, but you can hurt them.
These must be, because Kevin's dad is obviously a gangster.
Oh, clearly.
They must be part of his mob.
It's the only thing I can think.
Yeah. Either that or it's meant to be like a crossover with like Dick Tracy or something like
it's
that.
It's got that real Dick Tracy vibe. It's super weird, isn't it?
It is strange. We didn't actually see the Wet Bandits once in the sort of 20 minutes we played the game. And I think like we've hardly got... I didn't get very far in the game, but all I could... The only thing I could figure out to do was to collect all this like treasure and loot and, you know, family heirlooms or whatever and throw it down the chute. And that was it. And dodge these random gangsters.
Huh. Okay, fair enough. Gangsters and gold bullion. Sounds like Home Alone to me.
How many thumbs up for Home Alone 1 on the Super Nintendo?
I'm going to give it 3 thumbs up.
3 thumbs up!
Mainly because of the music.
Mainly for the music, which makes Home Alone 1 on the
Mega Drive.
Stroke Genesis.
Stroke Genesis,
for
that's
American
the
listeners.
Winning game.
That is the one that you want to go and play, folks, or not.
Milo, anything to add at this juncture?
No, I mean, like, you know, we're talking about a Christmas-themed movie and Christmas-themed video games.
Mm-hmm.
So, for you guys, what's your favourite Christmas-themed video game?
Is there? I can't really think of any.
I can. I'm definitely going to have to say Home Alone 1 on there. NES? Is that the wrong one?
Yes, it's the right one.
Batman Returns for the Super Nintendo.
That's what I was going to go for.
Ah, there we
no
go.
No way.
There we
Great
go.
Great minds think alike.
Ah, nice.
Does Die Hard count?
And I wish we'd had more time to talk to Milo, the video game king of Brighton. Thank you very much for coming in, and don't let the door hit your butt on the way out.
Yeah, so... when we usually do these wrap-ups, we're like having a look to see what other media is going on, what spin-offs you get there. And as we said, the TV series didn't pan out. There wasn't even like a cartoon series. There wasn't like a comic book or anything like that. But that's not to say that Macaulay Culkin did not make his way into the world of cartoons.
Ooh.
It just wasn't as wasn't a Home Alone thing. But you better believe that in 1991, a little series called Wish Kid came out, starring the voice of Macaulay Culkin as a way cashing in on some of that sweet, sweet Home Alone Culkin money.
Oh my goodness.
So I remember actually watching this as a kid. So Macaulay, he's in it, he's doing the voice work, and he is playing a character called Nick McCleary. And the whole thing about Wish Kid is that he is a boy that looks just like Macaulay Culkin, and he has a magic baseball mitt that he caught a shooting star in.
Oh, wow! And that's adorable.
Yeah, and what it means is that he... I mean, it's adorable, but it's also got Macaulay Culkin in it, so it's slightly obnoxious. But he can... if he, like, punches it 3 times, he can make a wish for anything he wants once a week.
Once a week.
So I think they're kind of, like, still going, like, well, Macaulay Culkin, like, he's hot biz right now. We can't do a Home Alone thing, but kid wish fulfillment, Wish Kid. Perfect. There we go. I mean, other than that, it's quite a, you know, it's quite a run-of-the-mill 90s, like, cartoon. It was only on for a year, but it's kind of... it's okay. In the opening credits, there's a bit where the cartoon version of Macaulay Culkin looks direct at the camera and goes, "Ah!" And he goes, "Okay, yeah, we get it. enjoy the ride, Macaulay." Yeah, so that was
the only foray. He was in that movie Pagemaster.
He was in the movie The Pagemaster.
That was animated.
That was animated.
But then he kind of abruptly quit acting for quite a long time, right? Shortly after, I want to say, Richie Rich?
He quit acting in 1994, the same year he was nominated He was nominated for the Razzies for Worst Actor. He was nominated for Richie Rich, also nominated for Getting Even with Dad, and also nominated for The Pagemaster.
Oof.
He put out 4 films in that year, I think, and he was nominated, like, Worst Actor for 3 of them. Still didn't win. Kevin Costner got that.
Well, yeah.
For Wyatt Earp. But still.
He's a better actor than Kevin Costner.
Yeah. Still, like, doesn't that sound like, this must have been, like, a sign that, I know, he got so big, and then in the space of 4 years, he's out. He's done.
He was a kid, man.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's terrible pressure to be under.
Well, I read a bit of trivia, and I don't know of, like, the validity of this, but it was that apparently when he was making Richie Rich, he actually was the richest kid in the world.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I guess it must be, like, you know, some, like, children of oligarchs with more money, but, like, in terms of, like, money that you have actually earned as, like, as a tween, I could see that. Like, he made big bucks and obviously hasn't had to do a lot of work.
I know there's a massive rift between him and his real-life father about the money that he earned. And I don't believe they are on speaking terms, which is awful, really.
Sad. Yeah.
There is some slightly odd things about him and his dad. Do you know where he got the name Macaulay from?
No.
Macaulay Culkin's father named Macaulay after the Victorian British politician Thomas Babington Macaulay.
Of course.
Do you know anything about Thomas Babington Macaulay?
No.
Well, one thing that I can definitely tell you is that even for Victorian England, he was pretty fucking racist.
Oh, okay.
Like, even for the times.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So this was Empire. He was the guy that was in charge of the education system in colonial India.
Oh, I can imagine this is going to go very well.
Yes. And he made it his personal quest to ban any language that wasn't English from Indian schools.
Right.
He didn't want Indian children to speak anything but English, even at home. The direct quote is, and I warn you before I read this, this is awful. He said, "It is, I believe, no exaggeration to say that all the historical information which has been collected from all the books written in the Sanskrit language is less valuable than what may be found in English."
Fucking hell. And then he was like, I'm going to name my son after him.
What a weird thing to name your son after.
That's fucking crazy.
Because all of the other Culkin clan have quite normal names.
Yeah.
There's like Kieran and Quinn and
Rory
and yeah.
Yeah.
And then to just go for this one, no, I'm going to go, well, you know, it's just because like the guy from the Ku Klux Klan,
Yeah, like, this one, he's going to be a big star. We're going to give him a big racist name. What the fuck is that all about?
And obviously, I'm not calling Macaulay Culkin's father racist. I don't really know anything about him. I'm just saying it's an odd choice.
It is a very, very odd choice. But Macaulay didn't stay retired forever, did he? He came back.
He came back in 2003 to play the murderer Michael Alig in Party Monster.
I love Party Monster.
Yeah, I really liked
That's
it.
That's a lot. If you haven't seen Party Monster, I would go, like, say, go and watch it. I mean, like, it's, like, super, super camp and all about, like, the club kid scene in, like, the late 80s, I want to say. Like, and I think that Macaulay's good in it. It's him and Seth Green, isn't it?
Right.
Is like the other like guy in the story. And it's like, I think that Macaulay is doing a good job, but it's so hard to tell because everybody in it is playing everything. It's so hyper camp, but you kind of like, I mean, maybe the guy was like this. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's got Marilyn Manson in it as well.
Nice.
There you go. Check that out.
Yeah, and so that's everything that we kind of know about Macaulay. According to his Wikipedia page, he recently popped up in the UK in one of the Compare the Market, Compare the Meerkat adverts.
Yes.
That passed me by.
Oh, I saw this and I was like, oh, that's weird. it was like around the time, like it must have just been like after he'd cancelled that Pizza Underground tour, and it's kind of like,
well, the Pizza Underground have split up now. Did you know this?
Well, good.
This is the band that Macaulay Culkin is in that do covers of the Velvet Underground, but replace one word of every song with something about pizza.
And all their instruments are like made out of pizza boxes and stuff, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah. So he was the vocalist, and then the news reported that they were playing at Rock City in Nottingham. And he stormed off stage during his kazoo solo because the audience were throwing beer at him, and then the band broke up.
I mean, it all seems fair.
Seems like both sides.
I mean, fair enough. Everybody should have known better. Everyone in that room came out and go like, yeah, let's just never speak of this again.
Anyways. Right, well, Tom, it is time, I think, for you and I to move on a little bit and delve into our own creative ethos for the Home Alone franchise.
Yeah.
This is the part of every franchise wrap-up episode where Tom and I come up with our own sequel ideas that we would like to see, we would like to make, that we want to be part of the canon and share them with each other. Tom, do you have a Home Alone sequel idea that you would like to share with me?
I absolutely do.
Well, hit a brother up.
I'm gonna do it. So, I mean, where do you go with the Home Alone franchise after having five films so varied in storytelling and technique? Well, you do what all franchises have got to do. Home Alone in space.
Nice!
So as everybody knows, if there's nowhere for a franchise to go, you go into space.
Because there's nowhere to go but up.
Exactly.
When you go into space.
Exactly. And so for this, I want to bring Mac back. I want to continue the McAllister story. I want Mac as he is today. And we're going to set this in a near future. And so in the near future, the Earth is just falling apart. Society is tearing itself apart. And scientists cannot tell if this is some sort of zombie-style apocalypse, or it's just that the way the world is going, just people just don't give a fuck anymore, and they're just pulling the world down around them. And so we pick up with the McAllisters in their giant home compound, where they are fighting off the maddening hordes that are beating down their door and tearing society apart. So we instantly start the film with the home defense thing, but we've got everybody involved.
Okay, the whole gang.
So we've got the whole gang. We'll bring them all back. We'll put Buzz, we'll get Fuller, we'll get Uncle Frank, we've got the mum. Everyone's there, and they're defending the home against these potentially zombie hordes.
Okay.
And so it's all kind of fun. It's like a little slightly darker twist on Home Alone, but it's in good spirits to begin with until...
Uh-oh.
A trap doesn't go quite right.
Uh-oh.
Fuller gets got.
Oh, no!
He gets pulled to pieces and just goes the way he lived in a shower of piss. And this rocks the family, rocks Kevin to his very core, because he was the one who designed that trap and it backfired. And so now everyone's shaken because Fuller's gone, and then they all start losing it. They all start getting careless. They get sloppy. They're all too distracted. And then the members of the McAllister family, they just start dying.
Oh my God.
And then they end up pulling back, so it's just Kevin and the mum, and they retreat back to this kind of central square in the middle of the compound, and they're getting into the McAllister private space shuttle, because this is it. Like, they've heard over the radio that Earth is falling. This is the end, folks. This is the end times. They get in the space shuttle, and Mac's like, okay, we're going to get out of here. We're going to get out of here, Mum. And he turns around and sees the door closing behind him. His mum is on the other side. She's out there saying, Kevin, I love you. I'll always protect you. But someone needs to be here to make, you know, to hold off the zombie hordes and to set off the launch sequence.
Right, of course.
And so then, like, this is a heartbreaking moment of Kevin looking out as the ship takes off, and he sees his mum being torn apart by all these zombies. And then that's it. Kevin is now, as far as he knows, the last surviving member of the human race. And now the film takes a very different turn. And Yeah, it just kind of becomes a lot like that Duncan Jones film Moon, where, and if you haven't seen Moon, you've got to go and see that, which is basically where Sam Rockwell is living on the moon on his own, just with a robot voiced by
Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey, the villainous Kevin Spacey, for company. And that's what this is now. It's just like this real like meditation on how you've lived your life. How do you go on knowing that your family is all gone? And this is just like, you know, like Kevin, just, you know, like watching old gangster films and being in like a holodeck, kind of like, you know, like talking to holographic recreations of his family and Harry and Marv, like trying to relive old days. But it just breaks him down to the point that he's like, I can't go on. I know humanity should try and go on, but I'm not strong enough. And he tries to kill himself. And then he wakes up and he's like, what? I should be dead. And no, it's like the ship's medical system won't let him die. It's been programmed by his mum. His mum who said, I'll always protect you. The ship won't let him die because he is the last surviving member of the human race. And so now he's trapped. He's literally home alone forever in this spaceship as he floats through the cosmos, just having to think about all the terrible, terrible things that he has done. And, you know, you got to think, like, the mum saying, I'll always protect you. Was this the misguided love of a desperate mother, or was this the resurgence of the Yellow King?
No!
Taking his final revenge on Kevin. That's up for the audience to decide. So there you go. A lot of laughs in it. A lot of laughs.
That is bleaker than I anticipated. But I like your moxie, kid, and I would watch that movie. That is absolutely for sure. Is it just called Home Alone in Space?
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I can see the poster.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, so I went a slightly different route.
Okay.
But, also, you know, a little less traditional. Mine's called Home Alone 6, Kevinfection.
Okay.
The tagline... Kevin, you're such a disease.
Yes!
Kevinfection. And this is it's a gritty sort of pandemic drama, a bit like Outbreak or Contagion.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And the infection is an infection of Kevin. Kevinfection.
Yeah.
Do you get my joke?
I get it.
Do you get my Kevinfection joke?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Because this is the whole film, people.
This is the whole... Because if you don't get that, the whole rest of it's going to be like, whew! So one by one, the people of the Earth begin turning into Kevin McAllister.
Oh my God.
Yeah, everybody, you, me, everyone, just one by one, suddenly we wake up and we're Kevin McAllister, which is ironic because all Kevin ever wanted was to be alone. And now he is alone with himself.
Oh my God.
Society collapses, obviously, right? Because Kevin can't even buy a fucking toothbrush or pack a suitcase. So how's he going to run a government or, like, run a hospital or do anything? Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
He can't, right? So suddenly you find yourself being, like, an air traffic controller, but you're Kevin McAllister, so you just fucking can't do it, right?
Oh, this is horrifying.
Yeah, exactly. So to try and develop an effective treatment for the Kevinfection, two scientists need to find the source Kevin, also known as Kevin Zero, right?
To get
of the root cause of it and develop some kind of vaccine or treatment. Unfortunately, they won't be able to extract his genetic code without killing him.
Okay.
Because they have to, like, get it out of his, like, the center of his brain or something like that. Yeah. I haven't worked out all the kinks yet. So the final sequence runs as follows. Kevin hides in his house to avoid being killed. He sets up a bunch of booby traps while Kevin and Kevin, also known as the Wet Kevins, try to break in. Kevin steps on a nail while Kevin falls down some stairs, all while being taunted by Kevin. While this is going on, Kevin sells his soul to the Yellow Kevin for a lift back to Chicago and begins to realize that he really misses Kevin. At last, Kevin defeats Kevin and Kevin, runs next door to Kevin's house to phone the Kevin cops. He's then at last reunited on Christmas morning with the full family of Kevin, 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 and don't forget your favorite, Kevin. Through the window, we also see that Kevin's neighbor, Kevin, has made up with his son, Kevin, and he smiles back as the credits roll and everybody's name in the credits is Kevin. That's the whole film.
I'm into it.
I will admit that I started with the Wet Kevins and worked backwards from there.
I like the idea of everyone being Kevin, because, like, I'd imagine, like, you know, someone who's like a Michelin-starred chef suddenly turning into Kevin McAllister, and then all they can make is huge bowls of ice cream. Yeah. And they're like, no!
This was meant to be a cheese pizza.
Oh, yeah, just cheese pizzas. Like, cheese pizzas and ice cream. Nice. Well, I really hope that Hollywood picks up the phone and gives us the green light for at least one of these films.
If not, both.
They're both perfect for the holiday season this coming year.
And this brings us to the end of this wrap-up episode. So thank you, dear listeners, not just for getting to the end of this episode with us, but for following through all of this season. It's been a real joy, and sincerely hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have.
Yeah, and for listening to those other seven seasons that we did, you crazy, wonderful people. Now, this is the point where we'd be telling you what's happening next time, what's season nine going to be. But we've got to say, for the time being, season nine is on hold.
It is on hold. Now, I hope you don't mind too much. Sometimes life gets in the way.
Yeah, so we just got to take... The plan is that we want to come back and do a season nine, but we've got to take a bit of a hiatus at the moment, because it's just like, at the moment, there's too much stuff coming down the pipe in non-podcast land that is going to kind of get in the way of us making the show the way that we want to make the show and at the rate that we want to make the show. So we're going to have to take a little bit of time, a little bit of a breather, a bit of a composure, and then we'll hopefully be coming back. And when we do, you better believe we're going to tell you about it.
Yes, so do keep your eye on the feed. We'll be sure to drop like a short bonus episode to announce to announce our return when that happens, and obviously do stay in touch on Twitter and Facebook, and don't forget that there are seven other seasons of this podcast which are in the archive for you to go back and listen to if you haven't listened to them already, ranging from Friday the 13th, Highlander, The Howling, Universal Soldier, A Nightmare on Elm Street, Police Academy, and Child's Play.
Yes, I mean, you know, go check all those out if you haven't. But otherwise, we'll hopefully be back at some point later on in this year. We'll, you know, we got some ideas about what we would want to come back and do, but we're just going to let those percolate a little bit and get full of flavour.
Percolate in that pot.
Yeah, so, yeah, until next time, just want to say, like, thanks again, guys. And, Tom, what's... got there?
Well, I wanted to say thank you to you as well, Tom. You've been honestly just the best co-host that anyone could ever hope for.
So, oh, Todd.
I got you this little present because I wanted us to always be friends. So if you open up the little box here.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's two turtle doves.
Two turtle doves. See, this way, you'll have a dove and I'll have a dove.
And then we can be friends forever.
We can be friends forever. I hope you like it.
I really love it, man. This is really, like, touching gift, and... I don't have anything to give you, but I do have something that I want to ask you.
Oh, anything, buddy, okay, anything.
Man. And what I got to ask is, I want you to wake up.
What?
Todd, I want you to wake up.
Well...
Todd, please. I'm begging you, you've got to wake up. You've got to wake up. Todd, please, wake up. Doctor, I don't know if Todd's ever going to wake up. I think he's just taken too many bricks to the face. I think we're going to have to do it. We're going to have to pull the plug on him. Oh God, I'd give anything to have Todd back.
Anything?
Nice yellow jacket.
Do you like poker?